You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, July 18, 2018.
I hear from folks that move into Indiana and they hear a bird they've never heard before, such as sandhill cranes, and they're just in awe of this sight that we have here in the state.
In today's feature report, we'll hear from Indiana Audubon Society Executive Director Brad Bumgardner about the neutering of the 100-year-old Migratory Bird Treaty Act. We'll hear about the Department of the Interior's decision to end fines for the industrial deaths of birds on today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the number of fraudulent activities and scams affecting listeners in our area is exploding. What to know to keep you safe on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Attorneys representing Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill announced a lawsuit against Hill's alleged sexual assault victims this morning. Attorneys Kevin W. Betts and Sandra L. Blevins with Betts and Blevins Litigation and Employment Law in Indianapolis announced the defamation lawsuit during a press conference at their offices this morning. Hill was not present at the press conference. Hill is accused by three legislative staffers and a Democratic lawmaker of sexual harassment and groping during a party at the end of the legislative session in March. Hill has denied the allegations and resisted calls for his resignation from both sides of the aisle. On Monday, Democratic lawmakers submitted a letter to Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma asking him to begin impeachment proceedings against the beleaguered Attorney General. Governor Eric Holcomb, Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, Secretary of State Connie Lawson, Speaker Bosma, and Senate Leader David Long have called on their Republican colleague to step down. Betts and Blevins stated they believe the allegations against Hill, outlined in a legal memo, are refutable. Successful defamation lawsuits must prove actual malice and reckless disregard for the truth. Defamation lawsuits filed by public figures are historically difficult to prove due to the requirement to prove evidence of actual malice.
Monroe County has signed a memorandum of understanding with the City of Bloomington outlining their commitments to the Monroe County Convention Center expansion. County commissioners approved the memorandum yesterday. The proposed agreement with the City of Bloomington would double the size of the Convention Center Advisory Commission. Under the new agreement, the existing advisory commission of 5 members will expand to 9 members. A majority of the new advisory commission appointees would be members of the public. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell says the new advisory committee will include Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. Bloomington Deputy Mayor Mick Renison will act as the head of the expansion project.
There is also an executive committee of that, which would include a member of the city council, county council, commissioner, and the mayor, kind of they're appointed to that body, who would review certain points along the way, including the selection of the architect. Well, just the selection of the architect, the project design that's going to be presented as it goes through the planning process, as well as the final bid specification.
County Commissioners Patrick Stoffers and Amanda Barge approved the agreement. Commissioner Julie Thomas was absent. Before the vote, Commissioner Barge said she agrees with having a majority of the advisory commission made up of community members.
The importance of, in this Memorandum of Understanding, Section 6A, having more residents than elected officials. This is something I think that the commissioners value greatly, and the other piece being who this executive committee. So on those major decision points, there are three major ones. We really think it's important to have the government accountability and being sort of responsible and accountable on those decisions.
County Attorney Cockrell says the memorandum spells out how the city and county can each use their portion of the county's food and beverage tax.
This indicates that the city would use their food and beverage tax to support the project, and that the county's food and beverage tax would be used in any way that is in accordance with the enabling statute, which is for essentially tourism and tourism-related projects.
Specifically, the agreement says the city will use its portion of the food and beverage tax for construction and renovation, financing the convention center, as well as the operations and maintenance. The Monroe County Council passed the 1% food and beverage tax last December to fund the expansion. The tax passed on a vote of 4-3, amid concerns by county residents that the tax has no sunset date. Mayor John Hamilton still has to approve the agreement.
Hoosier National Forest is adding over 100 acres to its protected land. The U.S. Forest Service runs the National Forest. The $500,000 land purchase adds 114 acres of mostly indigenous woodland to the Hoosier National Forest. Lands and Minerals Program Manager Ron Scott says the land acquisition adds woodland along the south side of Lake Monroe.
We recently acquired a little over 113 acres, really closer to 114 acres of land south as the crow flies from the Hardin Ridge Recreation area. Sort of west as the road runs, or at least southwesterly from the Hardin Ridge Recreation area. Really nice mixed hardwood forest, very mature. It was a really nice addition to the forest. The family that had owned the property had approached us 4 or 5 years ago with an interest in selling, and fortunately we're patient because it took us some time to secure the appropriations to purchase the property and then to work our way through the federal land acquisition process. But in late June, we closed on the property, and it's a nice new addition to the National Forest up there adjoining the lake.
Scott says he's not comfortable disclosing the family who put the land up for sale. He did say the family waited several years to make sure the sale took place.
Our land acquisition funding comes from the Federal Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is funded through portions of the oil royalties paid to the United States from outer continental shelf oil royalties. That law was enacted in 1964, and portions of those monies are allocated out to federal public land management agencies like the Forest Service, the Park Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Land Management. A portion of that money is also available for state and local grants, and that program is administered by the National Park Service. But we have to nominate parcels for funding, and it's a competitive process. There are national forests all across the nation that also are looking to acquire appropriate and suitable land. And sometimes it takes a couple, three attempts before we work our way up to the priority list, because there's far more demand and opportunity nationwide than there are funds available in any given year. And in fiscal year 2017, we were successful in receiving funding for this property and several others that we had been seeking funding for 2 or 3 or 4 years at that point. And until we've got the purchase money available, you know, fortunately the landowners were patient. They desired to see the property in public ownership, and it all worked out in the end, and we're very appreciative of that.
The U.S. Forest Service paid nearly $500,000 to add the 114 acres to the Hoosier. Scott says the recent additions continue to grow the largest public land in Indiana.
It's everybody's land. It's 204,000 acres thereabouts of public land, which makes it the largest unit of public land in Indiana. And it's not only a resource for the region or the state, but it's a national resource. A lot of folks don't think about national forest in Indiana in the same sentence, but for folks who live locally, they're probably well aware of the beauty and the recreational opportunities and forest products and all of the aspects and attributes that the Hoosier National Forest provides. I would just encourage folks to get out, explore and enjoy, and if they've got any questions, they can certainly check out our website online or give us a call here in Bedford.
The sale of the land to the U.S. Forest Service was officially announced at the end of last month.
A new property law allows Indiana landowners to mark their boundaries with purple spray paint. House Enrolled Act 1233 went into effect on Sunday. That law allows property owners in Indiana to switch out no trespassing signs for vertical lines of purple spray paint. The bill hopes to ease the worries of property owners who have to repeatedly put up and replace trespassing signs, chains, or fences to keep people out. The law says that the purple marks may be placed on trees as a vertical line of at least 8 inches in length and with the bottom of the mark at least 3 feet from the ground. Marked trees have to be within 100 feet from one another. Property lines can also be marked on the tops of fence posts. Indiana is the 12th state to pass a purple paint law. Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch is slated to attend the soft opening of Hard Truth Hills Distillery in Brown County tomorrow. Hard Truth Hills Distillery in Nashville is the latest addition to the Big Woods Brewing Company family, which has become the largest private sector employer in Brown County. Big Woods opened their first restaurant in Nashville in 2009. According to her public schedule for this week, Lieutenant Governor Crouch will attend the soft opening of Big Woods' latest venture, the Hard Truth Hills Distillery in Nashville, tomorrow. Hard Truth is slated to open to the general public Monday. Firecracker Hill, which used to belong to Brown County, was annexed by the town of Nashville last fall in anticipation of the Hard Truth Hills development. According to Big Woods part owner Jeff McCabe, Hard Truth Hills will bring 135 new jobs to Nashville this year, with the possibility of additional jobs to be added in the coming years.
And we've created another 135 jobs here at Hard Truth Hills. Everything from restaurant folks to the people who help us take care of the property to the tour guides and other folks at the Welcome Center. So just a range of jobs, and that includes the folks who work in the distillery as well. So that's I think that's a great benefit to the community. And I think we expect to begin to draw a new set of tourists to Brown County who may not have heard of Brown County, but will hear of us, and they'll visit Brown County for the first time. So we expect to contribute again to Brown County by bringing more tourists to experience everything that Brown County has to offer, not just what Big Woods or Hard Truth Hills have.
Big Woods Brewery is one of the largest employers in Nashville. Hard Truth Hills is currently the subject of a legal battle over water distribution rights between the town of Nashville and Brown County Water Utilities. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street.
Brad Bumgardner is the executive director of the Indiana Audubon Society with a mission to protect avian wildlife. As Bumgardner tells WFHB News Director Wes Martin, a key piece of that protection is the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. That act was overturned earlier this year by the Department of the Interior. Bumgardner says the dismantling of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act is a major setback to providing punishment for industries that harm birds.
Mr. Bumgardner, there's been a lot of concern in environmental circles recently with regards to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. I was wondering, can you tell me where that concern is coming from and what exactly this act does?
Yeah. So the coincidentally, the Indiana Migratory Bird Treaty Act is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, and this was a kind of landmark, monumental milestone when it was created to protect all bird species that are native to the United States. So this not only protects the birds, but also, you know, different parts of birds, their nests and their eggs. And at that time when it was established, it was against the purposeful assault on birds and the killing of them for various industries without regard to their population levels, as well as incidental killings that may occur. And so the biggest changes right now is not really a law change, but it's a policy change that the Trump administration is taking towards enforcement of that act. And where if an industry or organization is doing activities and during the course of their activities, they're killing birds, whether it not necessarily be intentional, then there is no fines or fees or punishment for that that kind of activity right now. So this was a policy decision that was made earlier in the year. It was made, I think, in the, right around the New Year period. And so you saw the first articles coming out in January, February, and there's been a few. And then the months following that, as they've been kind of following different incidents that might be occurring. So it's been going on for about 6 months now with this policy change. And so when you do this, if an organization, say they, in the course of their operations, have oil pools, and then birds get in, they see that flying by, it's kind of got this little sheen to it, they land in it, get stuck, they die, there's no punishment for that. And so what that means is if there's no motivation for them to change that, then they're going to continue that kind of operation. And where previously, if you would have had a fine, then that would have been there's a financial interest in mitigating those bird loss. And so basically now these guys can willy-nilly, you know, kill birds through the course of their operations for short-term financial gain.
And for somebody just listening in Indiana, for example, who would say, well, this doesn't have any effect on me, why should folks care about bird law, particularly here in Indiana?
Well, you know, I think birds are often bellwethers for a lot of different environmental conditions that are going on. And the Migratory Bird Act dismantling is just the kind of a beginning of so many other environmental laws, whether they're with the you know, National Park Service or the EPA, that we're seeing this dismantling for basically for financial gains. And so birds are a charismatic wildlife species that we have that a lot of people attach to and connect to. And so there's a lot of high interest in birds. We see quite a bit of ecotourism in Indiana, too. There's over 400 species of birds that can be found in the state. And we know that we have documented thousands of people that come visit Indiana every year to see the diversity of birds. And one of the biggest events that is held is up on the Indiana lakefront, where Lake Michigan is. And there's an Indiana Dunes Birding Festival that a lot of people travel to Indiana to see these birds.
Going further into some of the economic impact or personal impact that the reduction of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act would have. There's a lot of wind farms, for example, in Indiana. Is that one of these areas that you had mentioned where it's kind of short-term gain with regards to the dismantling of the Migratory Bird Act?
Yeah, so there's real kind of limited data that has come from wind farms, and we know that there is some data out there that's looking at the potential effects that these wind farms have. A lot of this data is collected and funded through these companies, and so this data may not be released if it's not in their favor, and many of the researchers that do this sign non-disclosure agreements, so they can't talk about the results. But we definitely think that this is where regulation could come in, looking at the sightings of these kind of wind farms in regards to where migratory pathways are for birds. We could be looking at turning on and off these farms during particular heavy migratory periods in the spring and the fall. But all of these could have a potential cost to these companies or more likely just a loss of revenue that could occur. And if there's no reason for them to do that financially, they're not going to do that. Where if they were accidentally killing a lot of birds and facing fines, well, they would probably be a little more open to that. And so right here at home in Indiana, wind farms is something that's under a big development right now and could have one of the biggest effects on our native bird populations.
So what is the next step now with this deregulation of the Migratory Bird Act? Is the Indiana Audubon Society or is anybody nationally fighting the deregulation of this act?
So yeah, you're finding a lot of statements and that are going out to the different various groups, to our memberships, letting them know about these things that are happening. So you're going to find not only the Indiana Audubon Society, but the National Audubon Society has a lot of local chapters as well that are just kind of getting the information out. We're encouraging everyone to contact your lawmakers. And then we do have a lot of our larger national organizations, such as National Audubon, the American Bird Conservancy, who are spearheading the efforts to file lawsuits to help protect these acts and some of the policy decisions that are being made.
Mr. Bubgarner, is there anything else that you'd like to add or anything else you'd like listeners to know specifically with regards to either the Migratory Bird Treaty Act?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Indiana is a great location to be able to see birds. And with that, over 400 species of birds, we're able to enjoy so much here every year. And I hear from folks that move into Indiana and they hear a bird they've never heard before, such as sandhill cranes, and they're just in awe of this sight that we have here in the state. And it shows that when you have humans getting together, they can do some real positive things and we can do some really bad things. You know, over the course of a few decades, we lost passenger pigeons, literally 3 billion birds down the none. We thought that could never happen. And so that just shows the power of what we can do to the negative. And we know what we can do to the positive if we really put our hearts to it.
Brad Bumgardner, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us, and good luck.
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
The number of scams and con games you need to beware of is just exploding. Here at WFHB, we often get alerts from the Office of the Indiana Attorney General, but lately we haven't had very many, as he's been busy groping for an effective response to some allegations of inappropriate behavior. Still, the list of swindles is far longer than we can handle in a weekly feature, so this time I'm just going to mention as many as possible. Make a note of the scariest ones and search the internet for details. Celebrities are being impersonated online in social media by scammers claiming they're giving things away, like money. Movie star Tyler Perry says his team shuts down scams like that on a daily basis. Romance scams are ramping up. The Federal Trade Commission says they tripled between 2012 and 2016, and now Facebook is starting a dating app, and the bad guys are all over it. Crooks create a fake identity, often using photos stolen from people in uniform, especially people stationed overseas. There's always a reason you can't meet in person, and there's always a reason your new love interest needs money. The Ray-Ban scam is happening on websites that sell designer sunglasses at incredibly cheap prices. Well, not only do you get a cheap knockoff, if you get anything, but your credit card can be charged over and over again. Phishing with a PH is a con using an email that appears to come from someone you know well or a company you do business with, saying there's some problem and asking you to click on a link to fix it. If you do, they may put a virus in your computer and or sucker you into giving away your personal info. Well, now they're popping up as text messages on smartphones, and the swindle is being called smishing. New cars have key fobs that use a coded radio signal to lock and unlock the car, open the doors, and some of them can even start the car. Car thieves have discovered they can use off-the-shelf radio receivers and amplifiers to steal the code or activate the car while you're at work or even in bed asleep. Experts are saying you really need to wrap your new car keys in aluminum foil or store them in a metal can. An email saying your car was seen by a speed camera and you owe a fine for speeding is probably a fake. Never respond directly. Instead, call the police department's public number and ask. And those DNA tests you can do through the mail aren't always what they claim. Recently, suspicious folks sent samples of saliva from their pet dogs. In one case, the results said they showed Native American ancestry, and in another, that the dog should try for a career in basketball. That's all the news that fits this week. Beware! I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Francis Sheets, along with Sarah Vaughn in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Wes Martin. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is a new program on WFHB and is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.